He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
With this mask, for example, I'm going to show you four different attitudes.
Hey, what you doing here? Ah, I understand. Yes, because when I go there... Oh, sorry. What did I say? There? Oh, no. I mean there. Oh my God, everywhere.
Kia ora, this is Voices, and I'm Kadambri Raghukumar.
I'm curious to try one of these, actually.
Do you want to try it?
Put one on to feel what it feels like.
Now, I can barely act, but I'm in the company of someone who'll take up or make up a whole new persona at the drop of a hat, or at the slipping on of a mask.
What do you recommend?
I never tell the students which one, because it's part of the process. Some teachers, they say that it's not you that's choosing the mask. That's the mask that's choosing you.
It sounds like a bit of a social experiment.
But here you have 94 masks, so if you're in doubt, I understand.
Yep, nearly 94 theatre masks from South America to Bali to New Zealand. This is a serious collection, and it belongs to mask obsessive and theatre lecturer Pedro Ilgenfritz. I'd heard he'd recently acquired a whole new set of masks, taking his collection to over 100. So I thought I'd pay him a visit at Unitech, where he's teaching a class today. More on the significance of this latest collection later on in the story, but first...
You started as a clown in Brazil?
Yeah.
Which year was this in?
1992.
How did that happen?
I was studying accounting.
Yep, from counting to clowning.
I went to see a theater work that really affected me, and it was silent. And the company was running a workshop, so I came along. They needed a male actor. And that was a workshop, mask and improvisation, clown. And they said, oh, do you want to join us? I said, yes. So I quit accounting, the university course I was doing, joined the company, and I stayed with them for 8 years.
So you would have been, what, in your early 20s?
Yeah, I was 20. And I stayed with them, and the company became a very well-known theater company, fully funded and touring around Brazil and overseas. And
tell me about the theater culture in Brazil.
We have a very strong tradition of popular culture, people's theater, street theater, physical humor and masks and storytellers and all of that. We were in a very small town that had only two theaters.
What was the town called?
Florianópolis. And we could not really rely on long seasons and performing those theaters. So most of our work had to get out of the building. So we performed in factories and supermarkets and buses and at the beach, the street. So my schooling in theater was in this kind of popular forms, you know, where the performer is the creator and, you know, direct contact with the audience. The whole base of the company was clown technique. So I was trained by them. This is what they were doing already. Was investigating specifically the red nose and the mask and improvisation. Most of our shows were silent. Didn't have any language. Later then we start the red nose became redundant and kind of fell off our faces, and the language and the style was in the background of other work. So it was clown works, but was more realistic and with speaking, but the structure was the clown humor.
In 1999, the company wound up, and life in Florianópolis wrapped up as well in some ways for Pedro.
That's when I decided to come to New Zealand.
You were so used to doing things like street plays and, you know, almost zero distance between you and the audience, much more interactive.
It's still very difficult. And I never tried to fit in. What I did is I discovered that there was people in New Zealand that also were part of that tradition, that worked in that way. But I also shifted my career. When I came to New Zealand, I stopped performing.
Pedro decided to spend a few years studying acting and drama at Toyfakari in Wellington in the mid-2000s.
And I then went towards theatre direction and teaching.
And so his world now is improvisation, theatre history and theory, and using it all to ultimately find poetic expression of the human experience. But it all seems to begin and end with masks.
So when did the obsession with collecting masks start?
I always knew that mask is a wonderful tool for theatre training, but I didn't have masks. When I came to Unitech to teach at Unitech, I was given the opportunity to teach movement. So Unitech had some masks, and I wanted to extend that. I wanted to make the collection bigger and to give the students a larger possibility to work with masks. At that time, the person who was running the acting course really supported, and I started to buy masks and make masks and contact people around the world and asking, do you sell masks? Can I commission some masks? So from those relationships, the collection just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And actually, I just sent an email this morning to get 8 more. I use them for performance training for our students. Because what the mask does is it stops the performer from expressing any emotion and information and thoughts with your own face. That's the first thing that the mask disrupts, because we are very, you know, we socialize mainly with our voice, how we communicate, and then facial expressions, right?
Yeah.
So by blocking this, the body has to be expressive. In the Western theater, it's very much here, in the head, in the voice, in the facial expression. When we start looking at Eastern theater traditions, we see that the body is much more active as a tool for communication. These were made by an Argentinian mask maker called Alfredo Iriarte. A really good neutral mask is very difficult to make. And these masks, they are empty. They are the beginning of everything. It's an infinite source of study. You can study the neutral mask forever, and perhaps the hardest as well. It's very difficult. And then when you move from the neutral, we go into the next one, which is the larval.
The larval?
Larval.
What's that all about?
This is not a fully formed human being yet. Very simple life form. There's just a little bit of a characteristic. But the thoughts are very simple.
And then there are the wooden, painted Balinese masks he got made by carvers there. Colourful, some slightly grotesque, and some with a lot of facial hair. Animal hair, actually.
Bondres is the kind of popular, you know, is the masks that represent everyday people from the villages. And bondres means distorted, grotesque. Look at this.
And most recently, Pedro was sent about 40 intricately carved wooden masks. A prized collection of one of New Zealand's theatre stalwarts, William Faramond. William was the former head of theatre studies at Waikato University and well known for being instrumental in Hamilton's Meteor Theatre.
Actually, I haven't met him personally, but we have many friends in common. A common friend called Brian Divers was a really good friend of William Faramond. He contacted me saying that I had a conversation with Olive, William's wife. And Olive has this large collection of masks. There's about 40 that William collected over many years. And when William passed away in November 2020, and I didn't know that those masks existed, Olive contacted me, and when I saw the masks, I knew it was a very special collection. And Olive didn't want to sell them individually. I think William was very protective of these masks. And I don't know, it seems that these masks haven't been used much. I don't know how much these masks would cost to buy. And what I said is, I can't afford buying these masks from you. But if you're happy, I can be the kaitiaki, I can be the guardian of those masks, meaning I can use and I will look after, and also not just me, but other people in the community, people, you know, other teachers and other directors that might have the interest to work with those masks. So they don't belong to me, they are William's masks. I feel that we are kind of continuing his work and his legacy. In many ways, I feel like I knew William for a long time.
The masks are made in the tradition of Commedia dell'arte with a curious Balinese twist.
Commedia dell'arte is an Italian improvised theater style that flourished in the 15th century in Italy and spread around Europe. They were made by Balinese master carvers, and there's hundreds of years of history behind these masks. We don't have that connection, that cultural connection with everyday life of Bali. We don't speak the language. We don't know about the gods, their gods. We don't know about those stories. So how do they translate? And now they are in New Zealand. So I think the question is, how do we really bring them alive? I'm lucky because I can work every year with a new group of 20-something students. I keep being surprised because different people animate masks differently. There are certain masks that I know they don't work, and I don't know why, something about the construction. But sometimes a student comes and put a mask that I think doesn't work, and then suddenly the mask is alive. So it's a mystery. I don't know how to really to explain.
I suppose it's as hard as having a favorite from amongst 100.
Favorite masks? I will always love the red nose, because that is the smallest mask in the world.
And perhaps because that's where it all began for Pedro Ilgenfritz.
As you start looking at these masks, and probably when you go home tonight and if you, you know, the weekend start to observe people, you will like, oh my God, there are masks all over, you know?
That's Voices Today. I'm Kadambri Raghukumar. Big thanks to Pedro for talking to us about his mask collection and his life in Brazil. Every week, I produce an episode on people from all around the world who call New Zealand home. So if you like what you hear, follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts from. You can find Voices and other RNZ podcasts on the RNZ website as well. Today's episode was mixed by Jeremy Ansel, and I'm Kadambri Raghukumar. Thanks for listening.